call the House Judiciary together. We're 5 minutes after one. And we have with us today Representative Gruenberg, Representative Lynn, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Keller. We have before us today, we were going to go back to HB 83, but Representative Gruenberg is working with us to improve the bill, and thank you for that.
It looked like a great job.
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Oh, I thought he showed it to you.
Just a glance. You know, I didn't.
It was really good.
I retain veto power.
Sure, Bill.
But no, thanks for your help. I appreciate it much. And then, so we have, that leaves us with HB 100 and HB 81. And we're going to start with HB 100. And it's a court system. And it's, we'll let Doug come up and go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and tell us all about HB 100. And by the way, my intent, I don't really have any today. Unless there's a lot of enthusiasm, my inclination is to hear both bills and let it go. You know, keep in, you know, just so you know. Just so get everything on the record. If there's any questions, or even if there's not, to get some of the testimony on the record to give chance for reply, we got time here, and then we'll pick them up at a later date.
I'm willing to pass them out.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not. Yeah.
Oh, you're not.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
but
not.
Thank you. We'll see. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Wolliver. I'm the Deputy Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for scheduling this bill. House Bill 100 updates the statutes that govern the geographic differential that judges receive on their salaries. Under current law, employees in both the judicial and executive branch receive a geographic pay differential based on the cost of living in the community where they work. The differential is applied to their full salary. The exception to this general rule is judges. There are two caps on the geographic differential that judges receive in rural Alaska. The first is there's an artificially low cap of 17.5% for the differential calculation, and the second cap is it only applies to $40,000 of their salary. So that has the effect of the maximum geographic differential a judge can receive, regardless of the cost of living in the community, is $7,000 a year. We have many employees who make far in excess of $30,000 a year in geographic differentials. The legislature, the reason we have geographic differentials is so that people serving whatever their position in rural areas have a salary that's commensurate to those who serve in the urban areas. The legislature has long recognized this. In fact, the first geographic differential bill was adopted by legislature in 1966. We've had them in place ever since, and they do apply to, like I say, all judicial branch employees and executive branch employees. And for all the same reasons that it's right to do this for other employees, it's right to do these for judges. Judges in the rural communities, even in communities where the cost of living, like in Kotzebue, is 60% higher, the judge makes essentially the same as a judge in Anchorage, which means that in real terms, the judges in rural Alaska receive a lot less. This has been a particular problem in Bethel. It's one of the hurdles we have in recruiting judges for rural areas is the geographic differential. There are lots of hurdles to getting a lot of candidates to apply to a rural judgeship. Not everyone wants to live in rural communities. A lot of them have established families and business, you know, interests and children in schools in the communities they live. But one of the biggest challenges is that you make a whole lot more money in real terms if you're a judge in Anchorage or Fairbanks than you do if you're a judge in Bethel, Kotzebue, Nome, Barrow. In Bethel, this has been a particular problem. Every judicial opening we have had out there for the last number of years, the Judicial Council has had to go out more than once to try to get enough applicants to apply for those positions to send at least two names to the governor. In one case, we never were able to fill a district court judge position through legislation at the time. We upgraded that position to a superior court judge, and we're finally able to fill it that way. We currently have been unable to fill the vacant district court judgeship that's currently open in Bethel. The council is going to go out again later this summer and have interviews out there in October to try to find enough candidates. Now, I can't guarantee that a more realistic geographic differential is going to mean we'll have lots and lots of applicants. But it is one of the main hurdles, because the cost of living in Bethel is about 50% higher than the cost of living in Anchorage, but the pay is almost exactly the same. And we've got some other vacancies coming up. In addition to Bethel, Judge Mike Jeffrey is retiring in January of 2014. He'll hit mandatory retirement age of 70. He's the longest serving Superior Court judge in Alaska's history. He served all of his time since 1982 in Barrow as a Superior Court judge. We'd like to have a strong applicant pool to replace that extraordinary judge. And it's important to note, too, that the geographic differential does not affect judicial retirement. Under the statute, and we're not proposing to change this, under the statute, judges' retirement is based exclusively on their base salary. That isn't true for all state employees, but it is true for judges. And we're not looking to change that. But what we are looking to change is updating those geographic differentials so that you don't essentially pay a rural penalty if you want to be a judge in rural Alaska. The specifics of our bill would apply the same geographic differential that other court employees receive in these communities, but what we have done is capped that differential to $100,000 of their salary. This is a cap that doesn't apply to anybody else, but it's an effort to keep the fiscal note down, and an effort, and it's a recognition that at some point you can only buy so much gas and milk, and beyond that you're you've made up the cost of the cost of living in those communities. So that's the bill, and that's the rationale, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Prudent has joined us for the record. Is there any questions for Doug? Representative Ledoux?
How much does a judge get paid in Anchorage?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, a Superior Court judge, I believe in Anchorage, makes $181,000. And a district court judge, I think it's $153,000.
Would you repeat that louder? I couldn't hear you.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, I think a Superior Court judge in Anchorage right now is $181,000, and a district court judge is $153,000.
Follow up, Representative.
So, and how about a Supreme Court justice?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'd have to check. It's maybe about 190 something, shy of 200,000. The only justice that would be impacted is Justice Winfrey in Fairbanks. And I think the geographic differential for Fairbanks now is 3% or something like that.
Thank you.
You made a statement that the rest of the court employees, have COLA available. Is it on 100,000 also?
Mr. Chairman, no, it's not. It's on their full salary, as it is for executive branch employees.
May I ask a question?
Of course.
Why are you then only doing it on the first 100,000 for the judges?
To the chair, Representative Gruenberg, mostly to try to keep the fiscal note as low as we can. Plus, we recognize that at some point, like you say, the cost of living is driven by things like the cost of heating fuel, the cost of gasoline, the cost of milk. As your salary goes up, you don't necessarily keep buying more and more and more of those things. At some point, there's a set dollar amount that says, it costs me this much more to live in Kotzebue than it does in Anchorage. And that doesn't continue to go up forever. So we thought, well, we'll cap this at $100,000, and that would give judges in those communities what we believe is a pretty accurate reflection of, a salary increase that matches what it actually costs to live there. If we applied it to their entire salary, it would almost double the cost of the fiscal note. And we just don't think that it really costs you $120,000 a year to live in Kotzebue.
May I inquire?
Follow up, Representative Gruenberg?
How about guys like public defender and DA and stuff? Do they get a cost of living on their whole matter, or is it on the first 100,000?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, they get the cost of living on their full salary. But for a lot of the executive, non-covered executive branch employees get a geographic cost of living differential based on a statute that was passed in 1976, I think. The court employees and most covered, union-represented employees have a geographic cost of living difference that is quite a bit higher than what the non-coverage in the executive branch currently get, because theirs is based on I think it was in 2008, or I think it was 2008, a study was done by the McDowell Group that was kind of the updated geographic cost of living calculations. And so most of those employees are under the much a higher level than like the Department of Law attorneys currently receive. But still, the geographic differential received by Department of Law attorneys and public defenders and OPA attorneys can still result in considerably more than $30,000 a year in these communities.
Well, if it were...
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Gruenberg?
I certainly would have no problem in going on the full amount, but I will respect the wishes of these sponsors of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Through the Chair.
How do our judicial salaries compare with other states? I mean, I know that it's different living in Kotzebue than it is Minneapolis, but still, you know, just curious. Have you done that?
Mr. Chairman, the last time we checked, Alaska is just about right exactly in the middle. I think our Superior Court judges were about number 25 or so, similar to the courts of appeal and the district court. So we're right in the middle of judicial pay across the country.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. You were talking about district courts and courts of appeals. Do you mean in the federal system?
Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, comparing the district court, you know, courts of limited jurisdiction and appellate courts across state courts across the country.
State courts?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't want to compare it to federal.
No, this compared to other state court judges.
So we're right in the middle. And do you remember any other states that were right in the middle, what part of the country they're from?
Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, I don't, but I could easily get that list. It's
because the cost of living and everything is higher here.
If you don't mind, why don't you bring it back? And then also, if you would, Doug, add to that, I'd sure like to know how other states handle COLA. I mean, do they must have it. I mean, there's big differences in the, you know, geography, one end of a state to another.
COLA, at least at the federal level, was unique to Alaska and Hawaii, I believe.
Anyway,
I'll find that out, Mr. Chairman.
And I have no problem with making you know, a fair and a good salary for our judges. We've got to get that done. But let's just talk about it and make sure that we're doing the right and appropriate thing. And of course, this is a year when we're starting with a deficit. And you just went through the court subcommittee process, and I know you saw the care that we're taking to. At least reduce the speed at which we're expanding, and of course this goes to finance afterwards. So that's not the real issue for us. Is if it's in the ballpark, I guess, and then we'll pass it on.
Mr. Chairman, I understand the fiscal environment we're in and the challenges I'll have ahead of me.
I guess that was the same as saying I wish you luck in finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pruitt,
can I ask? I mean, it's just. A substantial change from what's currently there. Was there any thought given to maybe phasing it in over the course of several years or something? I mean, it's going from 17.5, and I'll use Kotzebue just because they're the extreme, 17.5 to 60. I mean, that's a fairly large chunk just immediately. Just any thought? I mean, it's what it goes from 7,000 to 60,000. Any thoughts of either phasing it in or I don't know, just trying to thinking of the fiscal aspects and the fiscal reality of that we're facing in front of us.
Through the Chair, Representative Pruitt, we would probably work with anything we could get through. This is not our first attempt to increase this amount. Last year, what our bill did was we just applied as Representative Gruenberg suggested, to the full salary. We had a lot of jaw drops when they saw that, and so we scaled back this one. And if this doesn't go, we may try something more scaled back.
It's still a jaw dropper for legislators who make less than the increase we're talking about for Congress. Representative Ledoux.
Yes. So you mentioned Bethel as a place that you've really had difficulty recruiting judges. So are there any other places that you've had such a difficulty?
To the chair, Representative Ledoux, Bethel is by far the most challenging area, and the others, we have not had openings in a long time. Judge S. just retired from Nome, and we had adequate applicants there, but he was on the bench for many years. You say Judge Mike Jeffrey's been on the bench in Barrow since 1982. So we've had, we don't have that outside of Bethel. And Bethel also has two Superior Court judges and a District Court judge, where Barrow, Nome, Kotzebue all just have one Superior Court judge. So the openings happen in Bethel much more frequently. But that has been our main challenge.
So I guess I'm wondering, since you don't have challenges in other places, and other places have significant cost of living differentials compared to Anchorage, but you do in Bethel, that maybe the problem with recruiting in Bethel isn't simply a monetary problem, that maybe it's an, you know, I have no idea, but if you have a number of communities that have a different cost of living than Anchorage, and you just have one community in which you are having difficulty recruiting, I guess I'm not so sure that raising the salary is going to affect that.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you're absolutely right. There are a number of challenges with recruiting in Bethel. It's a very difficult caseload. It's a very heavy caseload. And those two things alone make it somewhat unique. And we don't really have any control over that. But what we can do is at least make the salary more commensurate with that received in a real sense, at least within the urban areas. And we don't yet know what kind of success we'll have in recruiting for Judge Jeffrey's position in Barrow either. Some of the communities, the further away they are, the more remote they are, the harder it is to fill. But Bethel has been particularly challenging. You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg?
I don't think that the policy behind this bill is just because we can't get people in Bethel to apply. I think the policy is one of fairness. The good lawyers around make a lot of money. I mean, that's just the way it is. People who go into public service, present company accepted, lawyers generally don't make as much. But they have retirement and stuff like that, hopefully. To attract good people, it's not just sheer numbers. It's good people who understand the law, who've got trial experience, who can get it both factually and legally. It's hard to attract and keep them. It's just, if we want to be able to do that systemically, it helps to pay them what we should. And this is a real problem, like at the federal level. They have real trouble sometimes getting good people for federal judgeships, particularly in other parts of the country. I don't know so much around here. But as at least one representative on the committee knows, people don't just go into judgeships because they want the money. But, you know, you want to attract good people, you want them to stay, you want them to be interested, because our whole system of laws ultimately is going to wind up in court if there are any issues. You want to have the best you can get. That's one of the reasons, frankly, that I think we had them adjust our salary. I mean, we don't have to be at the bottom end of the heap, that we want to get good people to do this. Want to get good people in the executive branch and good people on the bench.
Representative Ledoux.
But our salary, I mean, the amount that these judges make is so significantly greater than our salaries or salaries of most of the people in the places where they live. And I guess I'm just not hearing that there's a problem in any other place besides Bethel.
To the chair, Representative Ledoux, it is the area with the greatest challenge. But it is also, as Representative Gruen would point out, it's a fairness issue. It really, the judge in Kotzebue makes less been a judge in Anchorage in real terms, and the same with Barrow and Bethel and many other communities. And that's the real push behind the bill, is just so that they you don't essentially pay a rural penalty to be a judge in rural Alaska.
Yeah, like I was saying, my intent is not to hinder the bill at all. I don't see any urgency. We got, we got time. So, this will, if we hold it over, we got a chance for Representative Foster or Representative Millett to look at it further. And just want to give you an opportunity to put any other questions that are out there.
At the risk of sticking out Edwards? My head and I get banged with the gavel.
I'm sorry.
since we really, we're just a bump on the road of this, and the real issue is going to be over in the finance committees, I would hope at some point in the near future we could see this bill.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I am around for whenever you reschedule.
Okay.
Thanks for hearing it today. Thanks for your attention.
Okay, so we'll set this bill aside. And then what we'll do is go into Catherine. Yeah, come on. We'll go right into one, or just House Bill 81, which is a revisor's bill. And what I'm hoping you'll do is go through and be sure you identify anything that changes any substance, so we can, have focus on those, and we'll try to follow along. Introduce yourself for the record and go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Catherine Kurtz, and I'm the Revisor of Statutes. And this is House Bill 81. It's the 2013 Revisor's Bill. And the purpose of the Revisor's Bill is always to correct or remove deficiencies, conflicts, or obsolete provisions in the statutes. So that's AS 0105-036 that requires that we make these recommendations every year. There are some problems in the statutes that we can just fix editorially. That's under a different section, 0105-031, without changing the meaning of any law. We can fix misspellings. We can renumber. But the issues in this bill are ones that really should be looked at by the legislature. So that's why we're bringing them to you. That said, I try and keep my recommendations in this bill limited to matters where the policy is clear and just something has gone wrong with the execution. The Department of Law has reviewed this draft. Their comments, as always, have been helpful in narrowing down what to bring to you. I'll go through, but I won't go through every single section because they fall into a few different groups. Some of them go together. Section 1 adds an alcoholic beverage license, the destination resort license, to a list of licenses. So that was omitted when that license was created. Section 2 updates a reference to an educational accreditation organization that's changed its name. Section 3 has a reference to nursing home administrators that were licensed under emergency regulations from 1974. And my understanding from the Department of Law is that there aren't any more who are operating under those licenses. So that, too, is an obsolete provision. Sections 4 and 6 are changes to a term. The term is oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility. And that term is used in the offenses against property section, also terroristic threatening, and a few other statutory sections. So what we're doing in these two sections, in Section 4, we're changing the definition to match how the term is actually used in all but one place, which is changed in Section 6, where we're changing and to or. So we're just going for consistency with that. Section 5, there's a preposition missing. If you read the statute in paragraph 3, I'm on page 4 of the bill now, it talks about the other person causes physical injury or engages in sexual contact with the child. Causes physical injury with the child doesn't make sense. It's pretty clear that's not what's intended here, unless the concern was that the person and the child were ganging up on some third party, but that just doesn't make sense. So we've inserted the preposition to make it scan. In Section 7, we're changing the word education to educational to match the usage throughout the statute. So again, consistency is the concern with that one. Sections 8 and 9 change from election district to house district to, again, match usage elsewhere in the statutes. Sections 10 through 17 remove the phrase "but not limited to," as in including but not limited to. In AS 0110, yes?
Representative Grunberg?
I'm sorry, I had to step out for a minute. On page 4, line 9, I have read that a little differently. The phrase "causes physical injury," I had read that as causing physical injury to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So this would narrow it so that the statute would now cover only physical injury to the child. So let us say that the other person, who is the person who is the danger, has caused physical injury maybe to another person, not to the child, but that could endanger the child in the future. You know, if you move to hit a kid, and by error you miss a kid and hit somebody else, that would have previously been covered. But adding the word "to" would not let that statute cover it. Comment?
Through the chair, I think you have to read it in the context of the whole subsection. So the subsection is about the crime of endangering the welfare of a child in the first degree. The person who might be charged here is the person who leaves the child with another person. And this person, knowing it's this third person, the person that the child has been left with, causes physical injury to some other person, I don't think is consistent with the crime of endangering the welfare of the child, but that's my read on it.
If I may respond, the key thing is if I leave the child with somebody else and that other person hasn't caused a physical injury, we're on page 4. Okay, I'm sorry. Causes physical injury to, it could be another person or it could be another child. You know, the I'm going to call him a daycare person, has three children and beats one of the children at one point. To me, that's endangering the welfare of all three children. I think you're going to narrow it too much by putting the word "to" in there, because even if that child is lucky enough to escape the blow and somebody else is getting beaten, that child is in danger too.
Wouldn't Representative Grunberg, in that case, wouldn't that be another charge? You know, I hear what you're saying, but I'm thinking that...
What you'd be doing, you certainly could have a count for the child who's injured, but this would also allow you to add a second count for the bystander whose welfare was at stake. Now, you probably couldn't sentence them consecutively, because that would be a double jeopardy situation, because it would be only one act. But it certainly could be useful in enhancing the sentence. So, I mean, I also, it would impact the ability of the district attorney to charge, because sometimes when they can charge several charges, that helps in settling the case.
I can sure see why, you know, we tried to fix it, because, with the way it was, it's really broad and confusing, and, you know, your comments, I think, are well taken. It does change things.
As always,
Representative LeDoux.
Let's let Catherine respond first, and then
through the chair. It's not my intent to change the scope of the law, but to clarify and clean things up in this bill. And it could certainly be removed and dealt with in a substantive bill if the legislature wants to address the scope of this crime and finds it unclear, thank either you. As it is or as clarified. But
thank you for making that clear.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I just am not following what you're saying, Representative Grunberg. It's just not.
Representative Grunberg, you want to try again to walk through it?
Yeah. This is the reviser's bill. It is to clarify things that are, you know, manifest errors of some kind. I could see here, and this leaves some kind of a memory in me that I've looked at this statute before, but the thing that you want to do is to punish somebody who endangers the welfare of the child, and then it lists the kinds of activity. And here, what you're talking about is somebody who leaves the child in an endangering situation. Knowing that the person has physically mistreated or had sexual contact with any child, and the other person, the third person, has caused physical injury or engaged in sexual contact with the child, the physical injury could very well endanger the child, the welfare of the child, because it's put that child at risk, because it's in a situation that has resulted in a physical injury to somebody else. And okay. This is a person who's caring for the child. And what I'm saying here is, you know, it may be that the legislature would agree with me or disagree with me, but I think this has some substance. It's not just a technical typographical situation.
I'll give that further thought, and we will weigh it, and we'll see if you still are thinking that toward the end, and if there's any other. But I agree with Representative LeDoux that the subject is the child. You know, so I don't get it. Why you feel it's important to cover the eventuality of another child, but I can also see that technically, according to the grammar, you could be right. Representative Pruitt.
The one thing I would ask is, and you may know from, of course, going through this, is what was the intent when originally this was put in place? It sounds like we could be talking about a potential policy call. Maybe he's got it. Maybe Representative Gruber's got a point. But I think this is a typo, and I think she's hit on a typo that we need to correct. If there's a concern that Representative Gruberg has hit, then maybe we need to separately from the revisor's bill deal with that issue and make that policy call. But I think she's hit on a typo that we might need to correct and then address this in a separate.
Well said. We will leave it there, and then if you feel any different or.
May I? I'm sorry, I had to step out for a minute. I'd like to go back to Section 4, if I could.
Sure.
Last year, we dealt with the word facility versus facilities. And do you guys remember who were on the committee last year? We changed the word either to facility or facilities. And Ms. Kurtz, were you part of that conversation? It was with somebody else. We specifically used the term facility or facilities because of some other statutes. And I don't remember what bill it was on, but do you guys remember what I'm talking about?
I do not. Anyone else? I don't see anything. So.
Does that ring a bell with you, Catherine?
Again, Catherine, we'll probably bring you back and not move this today, but so just keep that on your list, and
we had a conversation with somebody about that, and there are a bunch of statutes that use facility or facilities around there. And this was an amendment to one of the statutes, and we did the singular or the plural, and then we looked at the other, and I thought we made them at the time all congruent.
You could look back at your notes and make that determination.
I don't have any notes. I may be nuts, but not notes. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. Here, please proceed. We'll leave that with someone aside, mark it, and go.
Okay. I can address that, or I can move on to section 10.
Oh, please move on, yeah.
Okay. Section.
Unless you had more to add.
Well, no, we do have a statute that talks about the plural and the singular. It's in Title I.
No.
So, I would note that these are in the criminal law, so it's possible that that question was addressed in a different title. But
what we did, the analysis we did, was looked very specifically at the word facility or facilities to see how it was used in elsewhere nearby where the definition covered it.
Yeah, through the chair, all I can say is I don't recall having been at that hearing.
And it may be just we have to look at whether it says facility or facility. I thought it was the same thing. I could be wrong.
Word search could get us there. Please.
Okay. So sections 10 through 17 deal with the same issue, which is including but not limited to. And again, in Title I, it's 0110040. It says that the word including shall always be construed as being followed by the words but not limited to. So for that reason, the recommendation here is to simply remove the words but not limited to. We try and keep that clean in the statute, so we just say including. We're relying on the statutory definition of what that means, and so it's not cluttering things up or creating any questions about whether that but not limited to adds anything.
So if I could ask a question on that, just I think to repeat exactly what you just said, but taking the words out like you are does not in any way limit or expand, I guess, what we're talking about here. If you take out not limited to, it seems like we're narrowing it down to what the application is, but you're saying not so.
Yes, that's correct, sir. I'm saying that because of AS 0110040, which applies to the entire Alaska statutes, it means the same thing, whether we put the words but not limited to in there or not. And I think it's particularly interesting that this occurs in a whole bunch of definitions relating to safety glazing. One can speculate about exactly how that crept in, but it may be something that was drafted outside Alaska in a state where they don't have that statute saying what the word including means, how it's to be construed.
Not being an attorney, but knowing a little bit about Webster's. You know, when I look at this and read the law to be able to understand, just pick one, you know, commercial buildings. It's a big difference between what's listed and, you know, and taking the words out but not limited to. So it isn't that I disagree with you. I hear what you're saying. It's just that it makes me uncomfortable because it seems like our laws ought to be very readable and understandable by Alaskans. And if Alaskan has a commercial building, you know, that doesn't fit wholesale, retail, storerooms, and office buildings, but it's a commercial building, you know, I can see where the average Alaskan would say, oh, it doesn't apply, you know, and so I don't know. For what it's worth, you know,
Yes, and there I would have to say that we do have this statute, and we have been following that rule throughout, so we have the entire code to think about, and there is the question of plain meaning, but in a case where we have a term that is defined or here specifically addressed in a statute, I think legally the meaning is fairly clear. And beyond that, as to what degree the statutes, and in this case, yes, that is different than the dictionary definition, but I believe the court would clearly refer to the statute rather than to Webster's because the statute specifically addresses it. So it's not something where we're going to resort to the dictionary. So it has to do with the fabric of the statutes as a whole. Section 18 has a reference to a regulation that's actually been repealed. So, and we try not to cite to specific regulations because they do change, they move around. So rather than replacing it with a new site to a new reg, it's simply replaced with standards adopted by the department in regulation. Commissioner of Transportation, there are several sections that are affected here. It's sections 19 through 21, 24 through 27, and 31.
If I could interrupt again.
Yes.
In section 18.
Yes.
Now, that definitely broadens it, because to me, that is a change. I realize it's more work to keep it up. But am I misunderstanding? But it seems like general reference to regulation is a lot broader than a specific regulation, and just in general terms. And maybe I didn't hear you clearly, so I just wanted to.
Well, that is one where currently the reference to AAC 61010. That regulation no longer exists, so it's sending you into outer space. It could be replaced with a reference to the current regulation that has the same flaw, in that may also change or be replaced. So there's a choice about how to address that particular problem, and if it's the committee's preference to address it by inserting another reference to the administrative code, that could certainly be done.
I want to mark that one, because I think that it seems like even though it creates more work, and I understand your rationale, I don't want to broaden that. But that's just my own feature. Representative Liz.
You know, at first I thought, hey, that's a really good point, and it may still be a good point.
Sure, sure.
But I guess the way it was before was adopted by reference under 8 AAC 61010 and other appropriate subjects. So because it put that catch-all and other appropriate subjects. Well, no, you're right. You're right. It does broaden it.
A little bit, yeah.
And unless we left it as occupational safety and health standards adopted by the department in regulation and took out that other appropriate.
Representative Grunberg?
Is there anybody online? Okay, may I stand?
No, it still goes on the record, Representative Grunberg, because if you...
You can or you can't?
Can't hear.
Can't.
All right, okay. I'm sorry. Usually we don't put in the number of a statute, and a reference maybe to federal law or something like that, because these things can change all the time. So I think this is probably in accord with basically with the drafting manual, is it? If I may inquire, please, Mr. Chair. What does the drafting manual say about this?
The drafting manual, through the chair, says to avoid citing to regulations because they change.
Let's mark it and we'll look at it. I'll look at it some more. I want to go back and see what the regulation is and just give it some thought on my own, and if you have further input, I'm fine. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I asked Ledge Legal to find for me the citations where the Supreme Court has specifically cited to the drafting manual as an authoritative source. And I have that actually on my desk. I can bring it by, but on a number of occasions, they have used the fact that something appears a certain way in a drafting manual as authority for their ruling.
Okay, that's great. We'll press on, but but I can't help but, being a rebellious human being, saying, wait a minute now. the usually doesn't cut it. We have the option, I think, here, but let's look at it, is all I'm saying. So thanks.
Sure, we have the option.
Yeah. Please proceed.
Right. Continuing, the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. There are 8 sections on this topic. Currently, there's no definition of commissioner in Title 35, which has to do with public buildings work improvement. So it's spelled out in several places. It's defined in one chapter of that title, but looking at it, all of them are clearly referring to the Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities and not some other commissioner, as sometimes happens in the title. So for that reason, we're recommending adding a definition that covers the whole title, and then moving forward, we can just say commissioner.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Grunberg.
Where do we add the definition?
We add the definition in... That's section 27.
Oh, I see. It's up at the top of page 10, section 27. Now, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. In amongst all that, sections 22 and 23 relate to dates that have gone by. The first having to do with rural school facilities, the second the Robert Atwood Building. But in both cases, we're just removing text involving dates that are long past. Section 28 relates to the public notice system. Currently, there's a list of things that have to be included on the online public notice system, and the current statute says that system has to include summaries of formal opinions and memorandum of advice from the Attorney General. And the Attorney General a number of years ago actually changed the way they categorize their published opinions. They don't publish all of their opinions, obviously. They have a lot that they do that's confidential, which is why we're putting the word published in there. But this is removing the distinction between the formal AG opinions and the memoranda of advice because they're not observing that distinction any longer.
Representative Grunberg.
So, thank you. So they no longer have memoranda of advice or the memorandum of advice are no longer published?
They don't use that term, is my understanding, to distinguish between the two any longer. Okay. Whereas now if you go to the legislative library, the old ones are in two separate binders.
Oh.
And the Department of Law used to distinguish, okay, we're going to put these in this category and these in that category. But now their website says that they have stopped making that distinction going forward. And that's been since 2006. So since these are summaries of new opinions, I don't anticipate any problem for them in implementing that. Section 29 relates to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, and it relates specifically to Chapter 60 from the session laws of 2012, which established the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Development Program. Here, this is conforming this section, 4488070, to changes made in that act. In that act, the findings and policy applicable to ADA, which are in 4488010, were changed to include the word energy, and a whole new article was put in having to do with energy. But the purpose section didn't get amended. So you have this litany of things that ADA can do, and it's not included in the purpose section, which looked to me like an oversight.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, I'm recommending inclusion of the word energy so that the whole thing is consistent. If it weren't the purpose section, I would hesitate to recommend that, but it's the purpose section, and the law is codified at 4488-650 forward that they're going to do that program. So for that reason, I'm comfortable recommending it. Section 30 resolves in an internal conflict between subsections A and I of this statute of 4712.310. A starts out saying, except as specified in this, this, and that, and goes on to set forth the rule. When subsection I was added, it probably should have been added as a reference up in A. So, and B through G of this should say B through G and I, so that the section isn't inconsistent internally.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
What does subsection I say?
Subsection I says a state or municipal agency other than a state or municipal law enforcement agency or authorized employee may disclose to the public information regarding a case as may be necessary to protect the safety of the public, provided the disclosure is authorized by regulations adopted by the department. So that's another exception permitting disclosure.
I see.
Is everybody satisfied?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
How about, are you going to talk about section? I'm wondering
she's continuing right now.
There's one last section. It's been repealed, and it is a definition of Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities that relates only to AS 3527. So because the term is now going to be defined for the whole of Title 35, we don't need the specific definition in 3527.
Mr. Chairman, back to
Representative Grunberg.
Back to something I mentioned before. Did the members get a copy of this memorandum from Mike Hawker to Legislative Council members? Okay. When I was talking about facility, which is over here on page 3, this bill was introduced really through the Rules Committee after it was vetted through Ledge Council.
Okay.
That's the way these things they go. The staff, the Ledge Legal Council, sends them over to Ledge Council.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ledge Council approves them and goes to Rules, and they get introduced. That's the way it works, is it not?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay. So there was a memo on this one section on page 4 that facility versus facilities, and I hadn't noticed that when I mentioned this before. Can I read the paragraph? So you
okay,
can.
Let's just clarify now. This.
I'm sorry.
This,
page.
This memo. The memo you're looking at is from who to who? Because I don't think we got that.
No, it's from.
It's when the bill was. It's basically the sponsor statement. It's the equivalent of the sponsor statement because
okay,
of the
okay,
way that okay. It has to be introduced to
yeah,
us.
Yeah. Okay. So.
So anyway,
that's good enough. I just wanted to put on the record what it was.
Yeah.
And what it said was, in talking about, there had previously been a U version, but they did a new N version because of this section here, as I recall. And this is what it says: AS 11.46.495 defines the term, quote, oil and gas pipeline or supporting facilities, close quote, paren plural, close paren. However, the term used in the statute is, quote, oil and gas pipeline or supporting facility, paren singular, close paren, and that's in quotes. Section 5 of version U, a previous version, changed the term in only one section, that being AS 1156.810.A2. Upon review, it was found that the term appeared in more than one section of statute and was consistently singular. Therefore, version N of the bill changes the definition to match the usage, and so it's in the general definitional section. But this relates to my recollection that this particular statute is singular all the way through, I guess it's AS 11.46, through the property crimes. And that conforms to everything. And that's fine with me. I wanted to put that on the record, that clears up at least part of my question.
Thank you. So the only things we have left to look at then are in page 4, lines 7 through 9, look at the word 2, and please, as a committee, just satisfy yourself that the 2 is what we want it to be.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look and maybe talk to a couple people. I don't want to make a big deal about this, and if I'm seeing something that is not a good idea, I'll let
thank you.
Know.
And then on page 7, lines 16 through 28. I asked for permission to look at that one as long as we got something else sticking it up. I'll work on that with you, Catherine, and just think through. So, is there anything else? that we want to put on the record as questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, for clarifying and refreshing my recollection on that point.
Okay. Anything else for the committee? Monday morning, right? We got what we'll be doing is I'm assuming then I'll have a clean copy of HB 83 of CS.
Got it.
And I don't want to deal with
it. No, but I mean, he's working on it. From what you're saying, you want him to show it to you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And we'll look at it Monday morning. And then we also have HB 104 back up. We've heard that before. That's the elections procedures one that there's been a few changes to.
Well, I'm going to have some amendments, and I'm working on them now.
Okay, well, if you could, as long as we have that till Monday, if you would, try to get those to us real as soon as you can. And then we'll be looking at HB 105, and that's what it is it changes the parameters for what a felony and a misdemeanor is on theft crimes. And what I intend to do with that is hear it. I do not intend, under any circumstances, to move it. I'm going to put that on the record right now, so you know. But I will be looking at it and just think about it, because there are some interesting questions related.
This is the Coghill bill.
Yes, yeah. Senator Coghill and Senator... Is it a judiciary bill? Senator Coghill, I don't know. But anyway, it's... and then we also have SGR 2 and SGR 6, and those are from Senator Dyson. So that got a big load on Monday, but I don't... We'll see how it goes, and... If we don't make it, we don't make it. It'll be an Energy Council break thereafter. Yes, Representative Gruenberg.
I should have my little question answered then, and I'll let you know.
Absolutely.
Because we could maybe take this and move it out.
Yeah, and I, if I could, Ernest, just want to direct, you can work with Ike and with Representative Foster, you know, make sure that they see it. So that we can hopefully react very quickly on several of these. So thank you. We're adjourned at 2 minutes after.